Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hi there, Herman and Corin. So I've mentioned that I have asthma in previous episodes, and I think I was diagnosed when I was like 13. It's quite common in Ireland. And when you have something for, I guess, this length of time, it kind of just fades into the background a bit. And usually it's well controlled through taking a preventative. I take a inhaler every day for decades, I guess, and mostly, except when you have certain triggers. And one of those recently, as I mentioned, there was a leak in our roof that then just got worse, sprouted mold, and I woke up with an asthma attack. And those moments are when it kind of gets scary. We talked about that whole fracas in a separate episode, but what I'd like to talk about today is indoor air quality, because we do need a bed to sleep in. We've been kind of on the couch for the last month now, and we're going to try to get through to the end of this tenancy so we can move to a better apartment, or at least the next few months. And returning to this room, I have to say, makes me kind of a little bit nervous. We got the humidity down, it dried out, and the air feels cleaner. But I thought it would be maybe actually a good time to actually properly figure out what's useful for indoor air monitoring. So we have humidity and temperature sensors in the room. When I started using Home Assistant, these were the first sensors I bought. They're pretty cheap, and they tell you something useful. So it's good to know the humidity is there. After you've had things like mold in your room, or even if you haven't had a leak, and you're asthmatic, and you want to just kind of check that the air is of a decent quality. My first question really is there any point in doing that? Because as much as I'm into tech and smart things, I think that too much data can be harmful. And I know that when we're talking about stuff like air quality and specifically, there's no shortage of sensors on AliExpress that say they'll do PM 2.5, PM 10, VOCs, everything. And with these air sensors, from what I understand, the general rule is it's either good or it's garbage. If it's of, you know, a certain low quality cheapness, there's just no point in having it because the readings aren't going to be reliable. So if you think that there is some, if there is a point in keeping track of your indoor air quality, the first question I have for you, in the context I've mentioned being, you know, asthma and the rest of it, is what parameters should we be looking at? I mentioned I'm already tracking humidity. PM 2.5, whenever there is forest fires here, which has happened about once a year reliably for the past number of years, the information I've got is that we have the air quality index, or AQI, and PM 2.5 is kind of the one that asthmatics need to keep an eye on. There's also ozone and PM 10. For indoor air quality, would you say PM 2.5 is a good place to start? There's also carbon dioxide. I mean, there's a whole bunch of parameters. I'll tell you the other stuff that I am monitoring at home. We have, in terms of our safety stuff, we have smoke detectors, and we have a carbon monoxide sensor as well. So I've already got that gear. So I'm just looking at, especially given the circumstances we're in now, and with our 6-month-old, if I want to buy one sensor that I know isn't junk, it's good. And it might be helpful in just telling me, okay, this is safe, this is fine. What would you recommend, parameters and any brands? Second part of my question, Herman and Corin, is that's measuring the air, but we also have treating the air. And this brings us into HEPA filters. Never owned one, always got the impression they were big, bulky, and expensive. But I read recently that this is a pretty small bedroom that we're in. There's actually, you don't have to guess, you can actually kind of if you can measure out a few dimensions, you can figure out how much air you need to treat and buy accordingly. So what's the lowdown on HEPA filters, especially in places where you might have had mold previously and you're just trying to make sure that the air is as breathable as possible? What would you recommend in terms of brands? And for a small space, is there something I can get that's not going to be a gigantic machine? Because when I looked at it before and ended up not buying one, but I was actually quite surprised. I mean, the room is tiny, but in turn, it didn't need a very big machine as I was envisioning. And it wasn't even very expensive, whatever I was looking at. So Herman and Korn, for folks who have asthma or allergies and indoor air quality, very neglected topic, what is it worth our while buying a decent quality sensor? If so, what parameters and brands? And what about HEPA filters and air treatment? Herman and Korn, let's talk indoor air quality today, especially against the nemesis of mold. Over to you guys.
Hey everyone, welcome back to My Weird Prompts. I am Korn, and I'm sitting here in our living room in Jerusalem with my brother, the man who has a spreadsheet for literally everything in this house, Herman Poppleberry.
It is not everything, Korn. It is just the important things, like the efficiency of our refrigerator and the optimal watering schedule for the balcony plants. But today, we are diving into something even more granular, literally. We are talking about particles.
Right. Our housemate Daniel sent us a voice note earlier. He has been dealing with some pretty rough asthma lately, and he just had a major mold issue in his room. The leak in the roof really did a number on his space. He is back in there now, but he is feeling pretty anxious about the air quality. He wants to know if it is worth getting a high-quality sensor, what specifically he should be tracking, and how to pick a HEPA filter that actually works without taking up half the room.
It is such a timely question. We spend about 90% of our time indoors, and yet we often have no idea what is actually in the air we are breathing. For someone with asthma, that uncertainty is not just annoying, it is a health risk. And after a mold infestation, the psychological need for data is just as real as the physical need for clean air.
I get that. When you cannot see the threat, you want a device that can. But Herman, I have seen these sensors ranging from $20 on those discount sites to $500 for professional-grade monitors. Is there actually a difference? Or are we just paying for a fancy app and a glowing light?
Oh, there is a massive difference. If you buy a $30 sensor, you are basically getting a random number generator that reacts to humidity. Most of those cheap sensors use what we call an infrared LED to detect dust. It is very imprecise. If you are serious about this, especially with asthma, you need to look for a sensor that uses laser scattering technology.
Laser scattering? That sounds like something out of a sci-fi movie. How does that actually work in a little plastic box on a nightstand?
It is actually brilliant. The device has a tiny fan that draws air through a chamber. Inside that chamber, a laser beam hits the particles in the air. The way that light scatters tells the sensor exactly how many particles there are, and, more importantly, what size they are. This is how we measure PM2.5.
That is the first parameter Daniel asked about, PM2.5. For the folks who might not be familiar with the jargon, what are we actually looking at there?
PM stands for particulate matter. The 2.5 refers to the diameter of the particles in microns. To give you some perspective, a human hair is about 70 microns wide, so these particles are 30 times smaller than the width of a hair. They are small enough to bypass your nose and throat and go straight into your lungs and even your bloodstream. For an asthmatic, these are the primary triggers for inflammation.
And after a mold issue like Daniel had, are mold spores falling into that PM2.5 category?
Exactly. Most mold spores are between 3 and 40 microns, but the fragments of those spores and the secondary particles they release can easily be in the PM2.5 range. If you are tracking PM2.5, you are tracking the most dangerous stuff. But Daniel also mentioned VOCs. That is a whole different beast, right?
Yeah, volatile organic compounds. I always think of that new car smell or the smell of fresh paint. But if Daniel is worried about mold, why would he care about VOCs?
Because mold actually off-gasses. It produces what we call microbial VOCs. That musty smell you associate with a damp basement? Those are volatile organic compounds produced by the mold as it grows. Even after the visible mold is gone, if the moisture is still there, Those VOCs can tell you that something is still happening behind the drywall. Plus, VOCs come from everything. Our cleaning products, the glue in our furniture, even some of the plastic electronics we have all over the house.
I remember back in episode 218, when we talked about the agentic mesh and how devices talk to each other, we touched on how these sensors can trigger other things. But before we get to the automation, I want to talk about the third thing Daniel mentioned, carbon dioxide, CO2. We usually think of that in terms of climate change, but why do I want a CO2 sensor in my bedroom?
CO2 is the best proxy we have for general ventilation. If you are sleeping in a small room with the door and window closed, the CO2 levels can skyrocket. We breathe out CO2, obviously. If it gets above 1,000 parts per million, you start feeling groggy. If it hits 2,000, your cognitive function drops significantly. You wake up with a headache, feeling like you did not sleep at all. For an asthmatic, poor ventilation also means that whatever PM2.5 or VOCs are in the room are just sitting there, getting more concentrated.
Okay, so we have our three main targets. PM2.5 for the physical particles and mold fragments, VOCs for the chemical gases and hidden mold activity, and CO2 for general air freshness. Now, Daniel asks for brands. You have been testing a few of these in the house lately. What is actually worth the money?
If Daniel wants something that is reliable but also easy to live with, I really like the AirThings View Plus. It is what I am currently using in my office. It uses an electronic paper display so it does not glow at night and keep you awake, but it tracks everything. PM2.5, VOCs, CO2, humidity, temperature, and even radon.
Radon? Is that a big concern here in Jerusalem?
It can be. Jerusalem is built on a lot of limestone and rock that can naturally release radon gas. It is the second leading cause of lung cancer after smoking. Most people do not check for it. But if you are buying a high-end sensor anyway, having radon monitoring built-in is a huge plus. The AirThings sensors are calibrated well and their app is solid.
What about the ones that look a bit more stylish? I know Daniel is big on the aesthetic of his room.
The Aware Element is the gold standard for looks. It has that nice wood frame and a simple LED dot display. It is very accurate for VOCs and CO2. Their PM2.5 sensor is decent, though maybe a hair less responsive than the AirThings or a dedicated Purple Air sensor.
You mentioned Purple Air. I see those on those public air quality maps all the time.
Purple Air is the enthusiast choice for PM2.5. They are incredibly accurate. If Daniel is really worried about the particles specifically, a Purple Air Touch is amazing, but it does not do VOCs or CO2 as well as the others. For an all-in-one bedroom unit, I would stick with AirThings or Aware.
Now, let's play devil's advocate for a second. Is there such a thing as too much data? I worry that if Daniel sees a little red light every time he fries an egg or opens a window, it might just spike his anxiety.
That is a very real risk. I call it data-induced asthma. You see the numbers go up, you start panicking, your chest tightens, and suddenly you are having an attack that was triggered by the app, not the air. The key is to use the sensor to find patterns, not to obsess over every minute-to-minute fluctuation. For example, if he notices that the VOCs spike every time he uses a certain cleaning spray, the solution is to change the spray, not to stare at the sensor.
That makes sense. It is a tool for behavior change, not just a scoreboard. Now let's move to the second part of Daniel's prompt, treatment. He is looking at HEPA filters. He mentioned that he used to think they were these giant, loud industrial machines, but he is looking for something for a small bedroom. What is the lowdown on HEPA technology in 2026?
First off, we have to define what HEPA actually means, because a lot of companies use HEPA-like or HEPA-type as a marketing gimmick. A true HEPA filter must be able to remove 99.97% of particles that are 0.3 microns in size.
Wait. Why 0.3 microns? If we are worried about smaller particles, why is the standard set at 0.3?
That is such a great question, Korn. It is actually a bit of a counterintuitive physics thing. Particles that are larger than 0.3 microns are easy to catch because they are big and they just hit the filter fibers. Particles that are much smaller than 0.3 microns are also easy to catch because they move in a zigzag pattern called Brownian motion, which makes them bump into the fibers. 0.3 microns is what we call the most penetrating particle size. it is the hardest size to catch. So, if a filter can catch 99.97% of those, it is actually catching even more of the smaller and larger stuff.
So it is like a net that is designed to catch the one fish that is exactly the right size to slip through most nets.
Exactly. And for mold spores, which are much larger than 0.3 microns, a true HEPA filter is basically a brick wall. They are not getting through.
So if Daniel wants a machine for a small bedroom, what should he be looking for? He mentioned small machines. Is smaller always better for a small room?
Not necessarily. You have to look at the CADR, which stands for Clean Air Delivery Rate. It tells you how many cubic feet of air the machine can clean per minute. For a small bedroom, you want something that can cycle the entire volume of air in the room at least 4 or 5 times an hour. If the machine is too small, it will have to run on its highest, loudest setting to keep up. If you get a slightly larger machine, you can run it on a lower, quieter setting and still get great air exchange.
That is a big deal for a bedroom. Nobody wants to sleep next to a leaf blower.
Right. For Daniel's situation, I have 2 specific recommendations. The first is the Cowway AirMega AP1512HH. It is often called the Mighty. It is a bit of a classic in the air purifier world, but they have updated it recently. It is compact, it has a true HEPA filter, and it has an ionizer that you can turn off, which I recommend doing if you have asthma, as ozone can be a trigger.
Why is that? I thought ions were supposed to be good for the air.
It is a bit of a marketing myth. Some ionizers produce trace amounts of ozone as a byproduct. Ozone is great for the upper atmosphere, but in your bedroom, it is a powerful lung irritant. For an asthmatic, even a tiny bit of ozone can cause a flare-up. So, always look for a machine that is CARB certified, which means California Air Resources Board, to ensure it does not produce ozone.
Okay, so the Cowie is a solid choice. What is the second one?
The Blue Air Blue Pure series, specifically the 411 or the newer 311 models. They use a different technology called HepaSilent. They combine mechanical filtration with an electrostatic charge. It allows them to use a less dense filter media, which means the fan does not have to work as hard, making them incredibly quiet. Plus, the entire bottom half of the machine is a pre-filter made of fabric that you can wash. It catches the big dust bunnies and cat hair before they even hit the HEPA filter.
I actually have a Blue Air in my room, and I love that you can change the color of the fabric. It makes it feel less like a medical device and more like furniture.
It really does. And for a small bedroom, the noise floor on those Blue Air units is almost zero on the lowest setting.
Now, Daniel mentioned the mold issue specifically. Does a HEPA filter actually kill mold, or is it just trapping it? Should he be looking for those units that have UV lights in them?
This is where we get into some misconception busting. UV lights in small portable air purifiers are almost entirely useless. To kill a mold spore or a bacteria with UV light, the particle needs to be exposed to the light for a certain amount of time. In an air purifier, the air is moving way too fast past the bulb for it to do anything. It is basically just a blue glow that makes you feel better but does not actually sanitize the air.
So, the UV light is just theater?
Mostly, yes. The HEPA filter itself is what does the work. It traps the mold spores. Now, people worry that the mold will grow on the filter, but mold needs moisture to grow. If your room is dry, the mold spores trapped in the filter will just sit there and eventually become inactive. The key is to change the filter on schedule, usually every 6 to 12 months.
That brings up a good point. Maintenance. I think a lot of people buy these things, plug them in, and then forget about them for 3 years.
That is the worst thing you can do. A clogged HEPA filter actually becomes a source of pollution. The fan has to work harder, the motor gets hot, and you can actually start off-gassing smells from the trapped dust. If Daniel gets a sensor, he will actually see the air quality degrade as the filter gets full. It is a great feedback loop.
So, let's talk practical takeaways for Daniel. He is back in his room, the mold is gone, but he is nervous. Step 1 is the sensor. Step 2 is the purifier. What is step 3?
Step 3 is source control and ventilation. No air purifier can fix a damp room. Daniel needs to make sure his humidity stays below 50%. That is the magic number. Mold struggle to grow if the relative humidity is under 50%. He already mentioned he has a humidity sensor, which is great. He needs to watch that like a hawk. If it spikes, he needs a dehumidifier, not just an air purifier.
We actually talked about the physics of humidity back in episode 313 when we were discussing why physical SIM cards are still around. Wait, no, that was the one about infrastructure resilience. Anyway, the point is that humidity is the driver.
Exactly. And the second part of step 3 is the flush. Every morning, even if it is cold outside of Jerusalem, he should open the window for 10 minutes. This is where the CO2 sensor comes in. He will see the CO2 levels drop from maybe 1200 parts per million down to 400. That fresh air exchange does more for your brain than any filter ever could.
I like that. It is a holistic approach. It is not just buy this gadget and you are cured. It is about understanding the environment. Herman, you mentioned earlier that professional grade sensors are expensive. If Daniel does not want to spend $300 on an AirThings View Plus, is there a middle ground?
There is. You can get a dedicated PM2.5 sensor like the TempTop LKT series for around $80 to $100. It won't have the fancy app or the CO2 tracking, but it will give you a very accurate reading of the particles. But honestly, for someone with asthma and a history of mold, I think the investment in a device that tracks VOCs and CO2 is worth every penny. It is about peace of mind.
It is interesting how much the technology has changed. I remember 10 years ago, an air quality monitor that could do all of this would have been the size of a suitcase and cost thousands of dollars. Now it fits in the palm of your hand.
It is the miniaturization of the laser diodes. That is what changed everything. We can now put a laboratory-grade particle counter into a consumer device. It is actually one of the most underrated tech revolutions of the last decade.
So, to summarize for Daniel, go for the AirThings View Plus or the Aware Element if you want the full picture, including VOCs and CO2. If you just want to track mold fragments and dust, a Purple Air or high-end TempTop is great. For the filter, the Cowie Mighty or the Blue Air Blue Pure are perfect for a small bedroom. Just make sure to turn off the ionizer on the Cowie and change your filters every 6 months.
And don't forget the humidity. Keep it under 50%. If he does those things, his room will probably be the cleanest place in Jerusalem.
Probably cleaner than the air outside, especially during those dust storms we get in the spring.
Oh, absolutely. During a Shirov, the PM2.5 levels outside can hit 300 or 400. Indoors, with a good HEPA filter, you can keep that under 10. That is a massive difference for your lungs.
I think we have given Daniel a lot to chew on. It is funny, we started talking about mold and asthma, and we ended up talking about laser physics and Brownian motion. That is the beauty of this show.
It really is. Everything is connected. The way a particle moves in the air is governed by the same laws that govern how galaxies form. It is just on a different scale.
And on that note, I think it is time to wrap this one up. Daniel, thanks for the prompt. We hope your lungs start feeling better soon and that the mold stays far away from your walls.
Definitely. And hey, if you are listening and you have found this deep dive into air quality helpful, we would really appreciate it if you could leave us a review on your podcast app or on Spotify. It genuinely helps other people find the show and join our little community of curious minds.
Yeah, it makes a big difference. You can find all our past episodes, including the ones we mentioned today, at myweirdprompts.com. We have an RSS feed there and a contact form if you want to send us a prompt like Daniel did.
Thanks for listening to My Weird Prompts. I am Herman Poppleberry.
And I am Korn. We will see you next week. Stay curious and breathe easy.
Until next time.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.